Welcome, ladies. Welcome, gentlemen. Thank you for tuning in to Red Ice Radio. I'm Henrik, and at our websites, redicecreations.com and our backup, redicecreations.net, you can catch much more of this program. And then we also have redicemembers.com for our subscribers as well. Today, we're talking with Sonia Barrett and Sherry Edwards about their new film, The Business of Disease. And we have an interesting discussion here ahead of us about alternative health and much more. So stay with us. All right, and welcome back then, Sonia. Thank you for taking the time to speak with us again. I hope you've been well since we last talked.
Yes, I have been. Actually, you know me. I'm always excited to be on your show, and always it's such an honor. It's such an honor to be on your show. So thank you.
Thank you, Sonia.
All really well.
Excellent. Really appreciate that. And welcome to you as well, Sherry Edwards. Nice to have you with us. Thank you for coming on the program.
Thank you. It's great to be here.
Really good. Now we're, of course, going to talk about the new film that you guys are featured in, and Sonia, you're behind and producing, of course, The Business of Disease. And I thought we could just kind of introduce you a little bit first to our audience, Sherry, since you're new to the program and we don't know that much about you. So you're a bioacoustic researcher. I read a little bit about you on the website and so forth. Tell us a little bit more about that and what kind of work you've been involved in, if you will, Sherry.
Well, right now I run a research institute in Ohio, and we stuff a microphone in someone's face and we take a sample of their voice. And from that, we can tell intention. We can tell what's going on with their genes, whether they've been exposed to toxins, what kind of nutrition they need. And we've put together a program of what we consider health problems in America. And so we're out to share this software with people. But all of this started from a very esoteric perspective, in that I hear sounds from people, like their signature sound, I guess. And when I duplicate it, things happen, like a headache would go away, or the blood would stop flowing from a cut. So this really is bringing together the science of it and the esoteric of it together in one place to provide options for people in this time of troubled health care.
Interesting. So how does that work? Just, you know, short here. Is this done with software then that you kind of analyze the voice sample with?
Yes, it's software that we build and that we share with the public.
And how does it work?
Well, we look at the frequencies of the voice. We look at patterns. We look at a math matrix. And things that are too high are not working optimally, and things that are too low just aren't there. So we look at what's happening. We just had a Bureau of Vocational Rehabilitation send somebody in this week that they had accidentally cut a nerve, and his foot was dropping, and he couldn't walk very well. So we gave him back the frequencies of that muscle in his foot as they were indicated by his vocal print, and now he can walk.
How do you replay it? Is it just through speakers or headphones or through another kind of modality? What do you use?
It could be headphones or a speaker. You know, it could be just like music in the air, but it certainly doesn't sound like music. It's sort of a kind of sound that entrains their brain waves and sends a signal to the muscle. And think of your brain as a central processing unit, and then all this neural network that frequencies run on. We found a way to jump into those frequencies that were being sent or not sent to different parts of the body so that we can animate the body with external frequency rather than the brain creating it.
Interesting. Okay, well, I guess we'll tie that more in later, of course, as we continue here and talk more about frequencies and how things are affected and the brain and everything else. But Sonia, let's shift over to you a little bit. I understand that you're the driving force behind The Business of Disease, and you wrote an article, I don't know how long ago now, it's called The Marketing of Breast Cancer. And I guess that this was kind of what inspired you to go further and look at the growing marketing, not only of breast cancer and the industry behind that, but all kinds of disease. Tell us about that, Sonia.
Yes, what initiated this was my observation of this continuous marketing. And I mean, obviously at that time, I think the breast cancer months kind of triggered it. As a matter of fact, I didn't even realize it was breast cancer months when I wrote that article. I just got tired of people asking me if I wanted to donate to breast cancer. And so I started to really kind of wonder what that was really doing to the mind. Was this really about getting people to be aware? Aware of what? That was my question. Aware of what? And so, you know, you've done shows with guests speaking about symbols. And I realize that everything around us, you know, is, we have a lot of symbols around us. I don't think we are aware as to just how much information is actually picked up more from symbols than anything else. And so I was looking at, you know, the ribbon. There's a ribbon for everything. But there's mainly, you know, everybody's familiar with the pink ribbon. And automatically when you see pink, that's what comes to mind. And I started to look at that. Immediately you see pink ribbon, pink this, pink that. Immediately the first thing, there's that breast cancer code. And so I just wondered what kind of impact that was having on our minds in terms of marketing and, of course, the impact on the body from a suggestive standpoint. And not setting aside the fact that, you know, people have diseases, latent diseases in the body, but at the time just sort of targeting how that code is triggering other things based on maybe someone's fear that already existed, and what we were shaping our young children for. So it's not just girls, it's men and women. And I looked at Pink Ribbon Barbie, that the fact that they had created Pink Ribbon Barbie, and you know, even toilet paper with pink ribbons on it, and the NFL store had, you know, all this pink stuff in it. It was just coming at us, and after a while, we don't notice anymore because all of these things become a natural part of our reality, and that's what prompted me to just put this film together and examine marketing all the way through to the body's ability to heal and for people to begin to take responsibility and ask deeper questions.
Right. So how does it work with marketing of a disease like that? Because I mean, obviously, what you're saying is that is not really the majority of what we're getting here is not that this is about solving the issue. It's about bringing awareness to the issue. So how does that affect people on the deeper and the more mundane levels, do you think?
Well, I think, you know, we live in a, you know, fear-based reality. I won't even say society, but I just think overall there's fear-based. And the reason why there's so much fear, too, is we have to remember the survival, the natural survival instincts in us. Our main goal as human beings is always to survive. So I feel that marketing of such illnesses, or just marketing of whether it be of crimes or you know, violence or anything that triggers fear, I think it's designed to play on our survival programs and the natural human fear of non-existence, of annihilation, of something happening to us. You know, wear your seatbelt. You got to put your helmet on. Just be careful. So there is that. You know, those pieces, those core pieces that are already there. And I think that the marketing now of pharmaceuticals as well as the illnesses plays on that fear of people not wanting to not exist. You know, so immediately, unless you're a person that questions everything, you're going to go with what is considered the norm, which is traditional medicine for quick fixes, or even on the mind, you start creating symptoms. You know, we've heard of that. It's one of the main ones was that restless leg syndrome, which we don't see the commercials for anymore, but how many people started to suddenly develop, you know, these problems, restless legs,
right,
just from the commercials.
Yep.
So I think in general, our minds are very vulnerable. We're very susceptible. And I think the reason for that, again, is we want you to tell us of anything that could possibly threaten our survival. A suggestion. Oh, let me check that. Oh, I was getting a headache the other day. I wonder if that's what it is. So symptoms are given to us that I think many people can actually say, you know what, I've had these symptoms, but not everybody's able to go, okay, well, I've had a headache, but I don't think that's what I have. You have a lot of people that will actually begin to form those thoughts of this might be happening to me. And then, of course, you know, it becomes an economic situation. There's money involved at that point in terms of, you know, increase. And then there's other things, too, as Sherry, the piece that you saw in the trailer where Sherry pointed out about the fluoride. But the whole idea is to keep people subdued. So I think all of this, you know, on a the pharmaceutical level, along with the marketing and that sort of, we're here for you. We're here to tell you what you need to do to take care of yourself. Well, that keeps people more, yes, in that sort of subdued, state. And what's the other word where you're dependent?
Yeah.
Dependent. On the system to take care of us. And that, of course, opens a whole other thing to healthcare, which, you know, again, is about depending on and making sure you're looking out for me, right? You're taking care of me, right? You're going to make sure I'm okay, right? That's the psychology with politics all the way through.
Yeah.
That's what politics, religion, and healthcare, they're all about who's going to save me.
Well, exactly. Get the vaccines, get the mammograms and the chemo, et cetera. Only go for the options that you have, that you know and that you've seen. But what is disease then from the perspective of what you've been trying to bring out in the film, Sonia?
Well, I think, you know, in one way, it sort of is clear in a way when it says, you know, we look at the word disease and we do see people, you know, you put the hyphen in between and obviously disease in the body. And what Sherry's speaking about with frequencies, I think it's being educated more on the science of the body from an electromagnetic standpoint, and realizing what we're speaking about, what we're talking about is obviously the cells or different parts of the body that begin to operate on lower frequencies. It could be based on emotional health, which the film talks about tremendously, because we need to understand how our emotions actually does impact the body, because every thought is emitting some sort of frequency. Everything that you're feeling, you know, it emits some sort of frequency. We know that emotions are electromagnetic chemicals. We know that it's the chemical response that we are experiencing in the body. So from that perspective, we start to understand more about how we're feeling, how those emotions and that fear and that worry and that stress, all of that, how that does measure a frequency, and then that in turn can cause the cell to what? To not have enough oxygen flow coming through. It's going to affect blood flow. It's going to affect the lymphatic system, you know, stagnation in the body. But it's not so topical as traditional medicine or Western medicine tends to make it. They tend to look at this, the dis-ease in the body, more from a topical level, which is why we cut things out. We cut or we burn things out. We don't look at what initiated it. And that's where this emotional aspect comes from.
Yeah.
In the trailer, you'll also see Dr. Guzami mention that fear also gets trapped in the muscles. And he's a quantum physicist. And he's very familiar, obviously, with, you know, all of what I'm talking about with frequencies, but just to hear him say that, how fear actually gets trapped in the muscles. So does everything else, all our thoughts, everything is processed throughout the whole vehicle, the whole vessel, and gets trapped. And depending on the frequency of those emotions, it will have an impact on how the body is responding. And we can tell by fear, when, you know, the knot in our stomach. We can see how when we're happy, it's a completely different energy. Well, the whole body is being impacted by our survival programs and our survival experiences.
Sherry, what is disease? What's your view on this? How would you define what it is and what it comes from? Do you agree with Sonia?
Absolutely. I agree that things are out of control in our healthcare system and as well as our bodies. If you look at this from the terms of the body's frequency patterns, when there is fear, there becomes this corrosion, this electromagnetic corrosion. And let's look at it as an electrical wire. And there's a flow on it. But if you wrap it in duct tape and wrap it really tight and really big, nothing flows. So you have this corrosion of fear and things that just don't create balance. And what we try to do and people do in meditation and with color therapy and just journaling or watching a film can really change what's going on in your mind. You let go and let things flow. And flow is a lack of dis-ease. So that we're all going to the same place. We may be using different words, but we're all going for the same thing in looking at this idea of being perfect in white light. Well, white light relates to a frequency, and that frequency is exactly ATP, the first chemical of conception. And then you move into the pinks that Sonia was talking about, and there you get mitochondrial DNA and RNA, which helps keep the pattern. So we're looking at words, we're looking at anything going to the brain as a frequency. It's changed into electrical chemical energy. You hear something in a range of about 100 cycles up to about 20,000 cycles, but it begins to hurt at about 12,000. So normal vocal range, say 100 to 400 cycles per second, you hear, the ear mechanically hears it, but it changes it into electrical chemical and it sends it to the brain. Same with visual input, and that's in the trillions of cycles per second. Still, frequency, cycles per second. Electrical chemical energy sends it to the brain, and the brain says, ah, it's in that range. That's visual input. Well, what we have found out is what all of those frequencies mean in interpretation and how to go in and keep that system, this neural network and the brain, running freely from the brain to the body and back. And emotions are just a frequency. Touch is a frequency. Frequency is dot, dot, dot. And we've just created a system of understanding that.
So is this all disease in ultimately in the brain, or is it down to the cellular and genetic level? Is it just something we hold on to, in other words?
I think it's to the cellular level. Some of James Jamczewski's work has proven that cells actually emit a sound. And then there's other people who say, well, cells communicate using sound and frequencies. Just one tiny little thing here. There is a signal that's put out, and this is Robert O. Becker's work, a signal put out when the body goes into trauma, a cut, a bruise, whatever. And the signal puts out, calls to it, calcium. Calcium comes to the site and acts like the manager. Okay, we need this, and we need this, and we need this, and we need this. Well, calcium is very near the same frequency as cancer food. So if there's not enough calcium available, cancer food, something called 5-HETE, is sent to the site, and that's where you get stress, dis-ease, because the cancer food has been called in, because it's similar, instead of the calcium. So one of the best preventatives of any kind of cancer in the body is to keep your calcium free-flowing, available for the body to use for repair.
Right. Keep you alkaline, pretty much.
Yes.
Interesting. So what does dissonance do to the body? And in the way you talk now as well, Sherry, that means that other things will affect us in the same way if you ultimately have a signal, if you will, that everything from radiation to white noise to music to things that are inaudible, you know, both above and below what we're capable of hearing, will mm-hmm. affect us in different ways. So dissonance, etc., there are a number of things that could actually affect the body that we don't know of or would perceive. A clear example of this would, of course, be, Wi-Fi radiation, for example, correct?
Yes, there is a lack of harmony. and there's a harmony in each cell, in each atom, in each unit, in each organism, in each person, and everybody needs to pull their part. And when we get bombarded with radiation, it begins to eat away at the cells, and that eats away at the organs. And if we keep it all in harmony and in balance, you know, just like we created music, man created music, I think in the same image as the body creates the music of its being.
Right, absolutely. I agree. And I think I just wanted to add that when you mentioned music, I don't think we realize that everything is a melody. I think that's something that we need to understand. Everything is really sound. If it's a frequency, it's got to be sound involved somewhere. So everything ultimately is sound at some point, at some given point of its, what should I say, of its structure.
Of its existence.
Absolutely.
Yeah. Right.
When you begin to go back and look at oxygen and sulfur and carbon and the frequencies of it and how it combines by frequencies to make new things, you quickly realize that frequency of even the non-hearing spectrum, as it moves together like two waves in a pond, it is what created the rest of everything.
Absolutely. Yep.
Do you guys believe that we can heal from all ailments using, well, I guess we could get into the different things that work, but ultimately in this line of thinking, it's not so much what we actually use, it's how what we use affect our belief system, and then we're into the realm of placebo effects pretty much. Sonia?
Yeah, I think that, you know, that is such a real, maybe I want to use the word tricky one, because yes, I think ultimately everything about what we think we are comes down to belief and programming on a collective level. We're talking on a social level, could be just based on the environment that you live in. And then of course then there's the bigger programming that you know, before we even got here on the planet, and what's in our, you know, our DNA and our cells, and what's come down to our bloodlines and stuff. So it does kind of go really deeply when you look at the idea of belief and what's in the subconscious mind, which is why some people can say that they believe that this will make them better, and it doesn't work. It doesn't work for them. So you look at, well, what, you know, did they really believe that? So I think then that becomes a question. What is the core belief? At the end of the day, what is the core belief that might be associated with, you know, again, a particular belief, a particular idea, a particular model that somebody might have about reality, about their lives, about their bloodline, those people who think that, you know, grandmother had breast cancer, mother had it, that it's inevitable that they will get it, you know, as opposed to somebody who says, that's not for me, you know. And I've met people like that, that it's just not even a question. They realize that this just does not have to be their reality. So even though there might be certain things that are latent because of the gene pool, it doesn't mean that it has to happen for them. So there you see how belief can shift something. But why does that work? Well, it worked because truly for this person, it is a truth and a fact. For somebody else, it could be something that they're trying to believe or hoping to believe, but they don't really believe it. So the results can end up being completely different. And our beliefs are definitely driven socially, and depending on what our religion is, our spiritual beliefs, then that controls that as well. So it really is one of those really, I think, interesting things that the traditional medicine does not examine people's conditioning.
Let me make it slightly more difficult to do, Sonia, and ask you about what you think about something like this. Let's say if someone is, for example, exposed to you know, I don't know, mercury or radiation or something like that. Do you think that the majority of the detrimental effects, health-wise, if you will, then, is due to the fact that we know that it's detrimental? That's what it's supposed, you know, that's what it does to the body, and now we know it, therefore it is. Or, I mean, there's a situation where people have in the past maybe not known what it was, but still they're affected health-wise. How does that work in the quantum mechanics kind of sense? It's a difficult question, I know, but what's your take on it?
You're saying that they, even though they might not know what, maybe that they have been exposed to it or what the detriments are, and then they're impacted severely, is that what you're,
right.
you're
yeah.
sort of saying?
Right, exactly.
Again, I think it's sort of like, I might understand some things that I understand, but I'm not going to go and drink poison.
Yeah, well, exactly, yeah, because you know how it affects you, and then you know that, you know, yeah.
Right, plus I know that I have not evolved to that state where I can override my body that strongly. Now, listen to the words that I just used. I'm saying that I know that, you know, I believe that I am not, I haven't evolved to that state. So here it is. My core belief is telling me you're not quite there yet to do that. So in other words, how one would have to sort of address something like that is you would have to look at or be in a mindset or be in an awareness to begin with that would sort of so open you up in a way where it sort of, I think, directs you to the things that you would need to do to support the body, to make the body stronger, to support the immune system, to do all of those things, to actually help you. You having to take things externally, not just your mind, but you're taking things externally, but you're being directed on the things that you would need to do and to take in order to help the body over this situation. Now, for somebody who's completely, like you said, unaware, but they're exposed. Now, chances are, yes, if you were to really check with this person or check the history of this person and what their beliefs are about life, because this is going to boil down, if we take it from a quantum mm-hmm. physics perspective,
right.
This is still going to boil down to our core beliefs, what we believe about life. Okay, for example, you know, you believe this person believes automatically from the get-go that something can kill them, that they could die. Maybe my belief might be that I don't want to deal with how that poison would affect me. I might not believe it's going to kill me, but I don't want to deal with the process of what I may have to go through to recover from this. That other person, though, may already have a core belief, which is what most people have anyway, that something can kill you, that I could die from this. So that in itself, I'm going extreme here, but that in itself, because that's most people's core belief, is the birth to death program, which we've kind of talked about on the show before. It's going to bounce off of all of these beliefs, even though you didn't know. All of those things are still connecting with your core model of what reality really looks like for you. I strongly believe that because everybody has a core model of what reality looks like for them and what they believe, even though a lot of those beliefs are going to have a lot of commonality on a collective level, which is the birth to death program. So I really think that, and along with strong that person's immune system is as well, and other factors involved, in terms of their genetic makeup and so on. I think that does come along and support them. And also, I think it has to do with the journey, what you're here for in this life. I think that there's some people that they can fall from a plane, and you've heard this. They will fall out of a plane, no parachute, and they don't die. Nothing
sure.
is broken, and somebody else, it will happen. So I think that we're looking at some different levels here of how this journey is designed for each of us, how this reality is designed, and how our core beliefs, connect with all of these, you know, all of these things.
Right.
So I think it's a bigger question that comes in layers.
Well, exactly. There's been some amazing stuff happening with people, both healing, of course, but also, as you said, they've, you know, been exposed to stuff or accidents have happened, but they miraculously just kind of walked out of it and they're fine, you know. So, Sherry, if we switch you for a moment, if we just again look at this mercury radiation kind of question, if those things and other that are detrimental to our health holds a specific frequency, and if it's that frequency, then that it's detrimental to us, and if we don't know how to override it, as Sonia said, then I would assume that it's those frequencies that would be hurtful to us. So is there, you know, in your view, Sonia, is there anything we could do to kind of, how would one go about of healing from those things if we've been exposed to it with frequency?
I think the body gets attacked at its weakest point, and mercury attacks the retina of the eye. And I've also seen people be able to heat up this one little patch or this patch or this patch and cool it off by just using their mind. So intention is very important. And we've had it accidentally with a guy on the phone that put mercury into his little tone box and went and answered the phone, and it detached his retina. He didn't have any inclination that that was going to happen. And I've been called into hospitals where babies, their lungs weren't developed and they couldn't breathe. And we've given them the frequencies for their lungs and watched them turn from gray to pink. They didn't have anything attached to what we believed, and there was no attachment to the outcome. But I've also seen this happen when somebody's tones were set to the wrong thing and they totally thought it was going to work, and it didn't till we set it to the right tones for the right level of what they needed. You can take a frequency, and there's just 19 common ways to deliver a frequency depending on how you want to look at it in the person's body. So I've seen this go both ways. People get well that are in comas. Maybe they hear us, and I could understand that their ears are really open, but I can't understand a newborn being invested in actual knowledge of what this is supposed to do with them. But I've seen so much control on the adult side, too, of what they can do with their body. So I don't know where the line is.
Well, I think that, like what you said with newborns, I think that that is a part that I've talked about, several times, is I think we have to remember that babies, they come in and they're in those bodies, but ultimately in the end, it's who occupies the body, what occupies the body. And I think that that's where, when I was mentioning the journey, what is the journey, you know, what's written for you in this journey, in this life? And I think that we start going off the charts, the physical charts, when we start to aim to understand these things, you start realizing we cannot figure out life based on all of our third dimensional rules. It's just, you know, that's just for comfort. But when you start looking or aiming to go beyond the third dimensional rules and concepts, you start realizing there is some bigger, way bigger stuff here. And so I do associate babies. Babies are, they're in little bodies, but they are beings equal to us. You don't remember anything when you're in that state. But I think we come in with some sort of intention. And I think some babies, their intention is to come and be here to live out the journey for however long. And you get some babies that they're just not going to be here. I mean, their journey was just to be here, delivered, and, you know, and just be gone. So that's sort of how, you know, how I look at it.
Yeah. Do you want to add something, Sherry?
Yeah. I want to think about belief as limitless.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
And this is what's producing the effects that we could see then, in other words, because where do you guys draw the line as well in terms of what you suggest people to do? Because obviously, in some cases, there's even, again, I'm back to that placebo effect, Sonia, that you know, we've talked about that with other guests as well on the program, because it's a fascinating effect, and it shows about the power of the belief, you know, of our beliefs, basically, because in some cases we might have a patient that goes on a, you know, a sugar pill pretty much, but believes it is something, and therefore, you know, actually managed to heal from the ailment. And so that's been kind of proven to work. So in some cases, it could be that the methods that we choose to go with actually work because we believe it works. Or, Sonia, is it that things that we try that comes out from the mainstream medical establishment ultimately at the end of the day is going to be hurtful to us? Or I mean, it's a tricky question, I know, but what do you think about that?
Well, I mean, I think that the things that come out from the traditional medical establishment, it can be detrimental. Obviously, yes, pharmaceuticals. But again, it's the same situation. You get some people that can take that stuff and it takes them out. And you get somebody else who takes it and for whatever reason, they manage to live. They might be a little sick, but they manage to live, to get through it. So I still keep coming back to the journey. What is your journey? What is, you know, what's written for you for this life? Now, with the placebo effect, I also think that it depends too. There are people that so strongly believe in something that this is going to work. Not in a wishy-washy way, but they really, in their hearts, just know it. And it works for them. And then you get people who say, no, I know, I believe it. But since you can't really see just how true that is, you don't know. But then do they really, really believe this at the core of their being? You know, so that's what I go back to. What do we really believe at the core of our being when it comes to certain things? And I think that's what ends up ruling out. That's what ends up winning is what the truth of what we really believe at the end of the day when it comes to certain things in our life. That's what wins out. And you know, obviously, that's a real tricky one, which is, you know, why muscle testing has been a way to sort of help to recognize, you know, what some of the subconscious beliefs then, you know, what you actually do believe on certain things. There's something I was going to say, but yeah.
Yeah. Well, okay, let me ask you this. If some people are meant to, well, it's kind of harsh for them, but if they're meant to die, you know, mm-hmm. they will die in a way. That's what you're arguing. But, and there's nothing that can be done about that. But does that to you mean that everyone that is on, you know, on this increasing sickness level, that's kind of, all right, that's just a bigger kind of thing playing out? Or how much, you know, should we put over to example the agreements, the deceptive agreements between the drug companies and government, et cetera, and how this is turning out?
This is a good question. But again, you know, what became a little bit, I won't even say touchy. I knew that with this film, there are certain areas you can only talk so much, right? But you can't go too deeply into like quantum physics or get really crazy with it. But when we say some people that are, you know, they're meant to die, there is still somewhere in there where we do have a level of control with who we are. But that level of control, I believe, far exceeds time and space. I think that part of us that is not as invested in the experience here, meaning the part of us that feels pain, what I like to call the automated robotic part of us, that part of us doesn't feel like it has that much control. And the reason for that is because that part of us tends to run mainly off of a lot of programming and recorded information. And we revert back to the old memories and, you know, programming in order to assess certain things. Then there's that part of us that seems to supersede that, you know, that level of us, that automated part of us. And I feel that when we are more integrated or when we become more aware of this multi-level existence, this multi-layered who we are, I think that begins to make a really huge difference in the sense of what is possible, what can be changed. Because again, when we are able to change certain beliefs, yes, that could totally change everything about maybe, you know, whatever the direction of your journey is. Dr. Cloutier Rapai, one of the things that he did say, which I thought was just so awesome, because when it comes from somebody, you know, with a PhD or, you know, letters behind their names, it carries a little bit more weight. But what he said is that people don't die randomly. They don't, the date that they die on, when they die, it's not random. And see, that's the part that obviously mainstream, these aren't things that you talk about obviously at school. It's just things you don't talk about because people don't understand it. Because why? We live so programmed. We live off of ideas and concepts that is given to us by somebody else over the last however many hundreds, thousands of years, or, you know, last 10 years. It's just all information that we've been given. But there, basically what he's saying is there are other components involved in when people die, and it has to do with some sort of internal choice. There is some other program, not program, but some other choice in there that's determining that. But I say that when we understand, the more we begin to understand, like even what Sherry is talking about, what they provide, the more our consciousness expands into realizing that all we do is we live in a sea of possibilities. We live in an ocean of potentials. The more that we can expand and open up and begin to go beyond, I think these programs, this program part of ourselves and this automated self, I think that solutions and options begin to open up for us. And it all becomes, yes, what we would define as very scientific. But yet these are just a natural way of living. We're just not used to it. So I think that part that exists that would allow healing for anybody, will be accessible. And I think anybody, and I mean actual physical body, can go through that kind of healing, but it all goes back to where we are, what we believe, what we understand, how limited our perception is, what we will allow ourselves to open up to. Some people wouldn't, you know, in mainstream, don't understand what Sherry's work is, and it's like, oh no, I'd rather go take some pharmaceuticals. So you see how that person is sort of already structured and set up that possibility to just go ahead and check out, even though there might be some other options that would just, you know, whip the body into shape.
You know, Cloutier Rapai is an interesting guy, and well done for managing to get him in the film as well, by the way. He's done some interesting work on marketing, and he's kind of, I would say, he has one foot in each world, if you will, one from a more kind of esoteric, archetypal, occult kind of world almost, and at the same time, he's kind of managed to continue some of the Edward Bernays level of marketing, considering some of the companies that he's worked for, and managed to sell his, you know, the thing that he calls the code about, you know, the unconscious levels of how we're, you know, what we're appealed to, etc. But why did you want to bring him on? What did you want to kind of have him in there for, Sonia? And when you went into it, what were your thoughts?
Well, actually, I wanted him in because of his expertise in terms of marketing. And at the time, my hope was to be able to, you know, pull some information out of him in terms of how marketing is actually working. How does it impact, you know, the brain and the mind?
Yeah.
Are we actually manipulated? But, of course, you know, he says we're not really manipulated. We are basically given what we want. Well, okay, that might be so on one level, but what we think we want is based on some other programs that are in there. You see my point?
Sure.
There's some other beliefs that are in there, whether you brought those beliefs from your parents, you know, from family, from the overall social programming. Those are core beliefs that then shape what we think that we want. So at a deeper level, we are told what we want, and then that then is defined as our authentic self. and that's what they're using for marketing. Well, no, that's what they want. No, that's what we got programmed with and told. So there's a base, there's a foundation that has been set from the get-go about certain things. And then that becomes the launch pad for them saying that this is what we want. We'll suggest these things to you, but you're going to take it in based on what you want.
Yeah.
But what I want is based on the programs that I have, because I'm just what? I'm a pile of programs.
Well, exactly. The question is who's put those, unconscious desires in there? And I guess, Rapai kind of, he steps away a little bit from that responsibility and just basically says,
you want what you want.
Yeah.
Yes, he does. He certainly does. So, yeah. So what you do is you have to just extract what you want. He's a brilliant man.
He is. Yeah.
Yeah, he is. I mean, so you
wickedly
extract.
Brilliant.
He's wickedly brilliant. Yes. And you really have to be clear to really see that with him and read between the lines on what he's saying.
Oh, yeah.
In order to put all the pieces together.
Yeah. Sherry, what's your view on marketing and the things that we're talking about now? Do you agree with what we're talking about here?
Well, I'm not familiar with some of the work, but I did want to make a comment on what Sonia is saying. In kind of a nutshell, our belief limits our reality, but when somebody puts it in front of us, that's not true. Like the nocebo effect, where they give people the real pill, but tell them it's the placebo, and they think they're not going to get well, but they do. So there's that nocebo effect that goes on too.
Yeah.
And I think one of the things that helps people get well, stay well, look for the things that will support their wellness is hope. And I think that's one of the things that Sonia's film provides. Even though the bottom line is health before wealth, when you look at the hope that's presented in this film, I think hope energizes people. Hope gives people clarity. And that's one of the things. I think that's why Sonia brought us in, because we're providing solutions and choice, just like, okay, here's a marketing person that creates the need, or puts it out there that this is, you need us. And that's the first thing. But with options, like when this stuff came down about poisoning with radiation, I was absolutely appalled that the government just changed its parameters. So we built a computer program for people to look and see if they were poisoned. And here's the nutrients that are solutions to this. We gave them hope that they didn't have to just sit there and be poisoned, and the government was bigger than they were, and there wasn't anything that they could do about it. I have just seen so many things that are beyond people's belief system, that they couldn't walk again, and I've seen some pretty famous people come in here that were hopeless. But when they see what can really be done from inside them, often use this story. You come home from work and there's a pile of dirty dishes and the laundry needs done and you don't have any energy and all that. But if that Ed McMahon guy came to the door to give you the $1 million from the sweepstakes, your energy would go up. I guarantee it. So where did it come from? It came from inside you. You can generate that hope, and I think that comes with options and solutions.
Mm-hmm.
And I think many, many people in our society don't see that or a way out, and I think that's one of the things that business of disease, health before wealth, I think that's going to begin to give people the hope, the solutions, the choice. And I think they're going to jump on the wagon here with us.
Well, I agree. And that was absolutely the intention of the film, because I've had to say that a number of times, that even though the title says The Business of Disease, the film is not about spending the film bashing the pharmaceutical companies. I think that we've had enough of that. I think there's a portion that brings awareness, because obviously you have to let people know what they're living in to begin with. But the film is really about, like Sherry said, It's about options. It's about hope. It is about getting people to want to take care of themselves, take responsibility for themselves, and to not feel that, not to rely completely on, you know, on the doctor, every word that the doctor says, but realize this is my body. This is my temple. I live in this body, and I am really responsible for it. What are my options? And the next part of that is to realize that the body has this amazing ability to heal under the right conditions. And that's what Sherry, like Sherry's work, is providing, the right conditions, which would mean the right frequencies. But people don't understand that if they don't even know, well, what is a frequency? You know, what do you mean by that? What do you mean by, you know, emotions or electrochemical impulses? What do you mean by these things? So the film is presenting it in a way where you understand it over here. Okay, this is marketing. This is how you function. This is this. This is that. Now, here are some options. And that's why the people that are in this film, it's mainly all of these kinds of people that, yes, a lot of these people are a bit more scientific. I wanted to bring in people that the public is so used to, like I said, you know, people that are scientific or PhDs behind their name, but it wasn't just anybody with PhDs. These are people who are also very conscious, extremely aware, but they're not giving you woo-woo information either. They're giving you solid information that you can research yourself and put the dots together. So it's not just Sonia saying you can do this, but they're telling you how and why it is possible. That's what the film is about.
Well, very good. Well, exactly. I mean, in some cases, and I would say, unfortunately, that many people, they do rely on that, you know, as you say, the letters after the name kind of thing, you know, the MD or what have you, because we're still, you know, many people, rather, is still bound by, you know, the appeal to authority, basically, and that's unfortunate, but at the same time, if you can manage to move in the right direction with the aid of that, you know, why not? But I want to talk more about the film in the second hour. There's much more I want to ask you both about when it comes to this, but let's just talk a little bit about when and also then how, Sonia, the film will be available and we'll give out websites and everything else as well. So what's the delivery method here, and when do you plan it for to be out?
Well, the plan is this fall. I don't have a specific date. The plan is this fall, and it's not going directly to DVD, to my knowledge. It might be video on demand, but we're still looking at some screenings. We're still looking at theater screenings, but I will know more. But that is basically where it is right now, is that there will probably be, there are people that have already, you know, volunteered, and then we're looking into the theater process of doing some theater showing, and of course VOD, video on demand, where they'll be able to watch it that way, and then, you know, eventually it will be available then on DVD. And then there's a book that goes with the film, which obviously you'll be able to buy the book. It'll come out at that time, so you'll be able to buy the book separately. And that's it's a chapter written by everybody in the film. So that's going to be also very, very awesome. So I wanted to be able to do something like that, so it's not just a film, but they always have something that they can pick up and be reminded. And the website is thebusinessofdisease.com. So it's thebusinessofdisease.com.
All right, very good. A different take on disease and how to combat it, of course. I wanted to ask you as well, Sherry, your website, and if there's anything else you want to mention about that.
Ours is soundhealthoptions.com. And the radiation software that I was talking about is there waiting for people. It's free. They can download it. Test themselves, the charts are free, the instructions are free. So it's there to help people monitor and protect themselves. We built it by request for somebody on the West Coast that was very concerned and getting very ill, and then just decided to give it out to everyone. But I want to talk about something exciting just for a minute. Do you know there's an article just came out, and it's a British pharmaceutical film that's putting little pellets of things that can make frequencies in people's bodies, because it says British pharmaceutical firm betting that electroceuticals will treat complex diseases. Sonia, this means that these pharmaceutical companies are following in our footsteps. I just think that's incredible.
Oh, yeah. I wonder how what the delivery method will be there, because then, you know, and it's kind of weird, then we're almost into the realm of like RFID chips and stuff like that, right? Interesting. Mm-hmm. Weird.
Yeah, they are kind of there, though.
yeah, well, it's true.
GlaxoSmithKline is doing this one. And in 2004, Pfizer Pharmaceuticals followed in a project that we did in being able to predict Parkinson's by someone's vocal print. So they're catching on that this really is the medicine of the future.
Electroceuticals, and ultimately this is the effect, I mean, and I've heard people talk about this for years, just as you guys are talking about it now, but this idea that, you know, at the end of the day, when you take a pill and swallow that and whatever, that at the end of the stay, at the end of the you know, as this has elapsed, if you will, the effect is equally as you have, you know, gotten basically a frequency added to your body, correct? That's how it works. So now they're just basically bypassing then that middle step, if you will, and going straight to for the effect, if you will, right?
Absolutely. They're looking at pain and blocking nerves and that kind of thing. But we can help regrow nerves. I think the body had the ability to do this, and it somehow forgot. And
yeah.
we're just helping it remember.
Well, yeah, that's the awesome part. I mean, that's really where if this film could go where I wanted to go, that's where I'd like to go, because yes, the body can do anything. I mean, it can grow limbs. I mean, just, you know, which is what stem cell research was about, is starting that whole process. And so I think it's just opening up our minds to this realization that the body is this magnificent mechanism that can really alter itself. It can change itself.
One of the things that we're doing right now is putting oxygen by frequency in people's environments. And it seems that increase in oxygen 24 hours a day, people are just healing themselves and losing weight. And I think because there's been an oxygen decrease, and I can't prove any of this, that people are healing themselves. And I would like to pursue this. You know, we're doing a study right now on leukemia, and we've decoded stem cells, and we're trying that out. We've had one little girl that came in. She had 6 weeks to live, and, you know, she's doing great because we gave her the frequencies of oxygen and stem cells.
Interesting. Hey, by the way, Cher, I wanted to ask you regarding the software and all that. Do you write it yourself, or do you get help to do it?
We have staff here that does. I design it, and then the staff builds it, and then we provide it to the public based on what we think is the problems. And radiation, I think, is the very first problem. The second one that we just put up today, because GMO foods are really causing havoc with people's liver, we just put one up for fatigue of the liver. And so that's ready for download for people, too.
All right. Very good. Well, we're going to take a short break here at this stage. I'm going to get off the websites here one more time, Dan. TheBusinessOfDisease.com for Sonia's website. And then, of course, you have SpiritInform.com as well, Sonia, correct?
Right.
Yeah, the website. And then for Sherry's website, SoundHealthOptions.com. We'll have all of these links up there as well. All right, well, stay with me, guys. We'll take a short break here. We'll return in just a moment with more. We'll be right back. will continue as we do for a second hour at redicemembers.com. You can subscribe there and get full access to our archives. Try out a 3-month subscription. It's quick and easy, and for only about the cost of 2 cups of coffee per month, you support an independent broadcast that spares you from commercial interruptions and an ad-free website as well. Before we proceed, though, we have David Icke coming up next, and then we have some great programs following this. You can check out our upcoming guests in our radio archives on either sites, redicecreations.com, redicradio.net, or redicemembers.com. So thank you for listening. I hope that you stay with us, and we will see you on the other side.